This is Investor IQ on News Radio 570 WWNC.
And we are back. Before the break, we were discussing penny stocks. This segment, I think Alice has another question that she's going to pull out of the mailbag. But before she does that, Forrest, I want to talk a little bit more about your name.
Okay.
You know, I was thinking that you know that at some point in time there had to be some fine Manson family who just happened to name their kid Chuck or something like that.
Right.
And then, you know, Charles comes along and just wrecks the whole thing.
It.
And then the next thing you know, you've got like this this public relations disaster. So, I mean, that stuff, you know, happens all the time, don't you think?
It does. It does. Just like you had a nice, the Hitler family or whatever, if you want to go there, and they named their child Adolf, and that one's ruined.
Yeah. I mean, I know somebody, they were going to name their kid Paris, you know, Paris Jones or something like
right.
that.
Right, that's ruined.
Then try to get that kid to do her homework. Yeah, that's
exactly.
going to work out. So
I would like to say one thing, Forrest, though. I think it's a very pretty name.
Thank
and
you.
Don't let Glenn give you a complex about it.
Oh, if I've not got a complex by now about my name, I'm never going to get one.
All right, so what do you have in the bag, Alice?
All right, we have a comment from Jennifer, something that just doesn't make any sense to her. She says she shifted her 401k balance away from stocks earlier this year. I haven't shifted any money back to stocks yet, mainly because I don't see how a jobless recovery could be good for the stock market. So I'm perplexed as to why stocks have risen so much during the last 6 to 7 months.
Well, Jennifer, the first thing you have to remember is that investors are forward-looking, not rearward-looking, or not even looking at the present. They're always trying to see what's around the next corner. So when an economy gears up, it generally takes quite a while for there to be an increased demand for jobs. So despite what you hear in the news, on the cable networks, jobless recoveries are, you ready for this? This is a newsflash, absolutely normal. It happens most every time. That's why the general rate of unemployment is considered to be a lagging indicator. That's also why investors, as a group, especially institutional investors, they pay attention to different numbers, not the general level of unemployment. There's an analogy that I could use here. The summer solstice, which is the longest daylight day during the summer, usually happens on June 21st or June 22nd, that would seemingly correlate with the hottest day because you're under the sun for the longest period of time. However, if you check the Farmer's Almanac or whatever records there are out there, what you'll see is that the hottest month, at least in the northern hemisphere, is typically July, and possibly August is even hotter than June. So what happens is there's a lag between when the sun is applied to the earth and when the earth actually starts to demonstrate that heat. So you have the same issue in the economy. There's a lag between the recovery, which starts to create the eventual demand for jobs, and the actual data, which suggests that the jobs are actually in existence. So, excuse me, just to put some numbers on that answer, we've had 11 recessions going back to about 1940 or so, depending on, you know, how you count your recessions. Out of those 11 recessions, during the last half or the last portion of each recession, the unemployment rate universally was higher than it was at the beginning of the recession. So if we look, for instance, at the recession of 1949, unemployment rate started around 4%. It ended at 8% when the recession ended, or it reached 8%. During the latter stages of that recession, the stock market went up. The same thing happened in the 1953 or 1954 recession. So out of 11 recessions that we've had over the last, I don't know how many years that'd be, 70 years or so, only two recessions corresponded with a decreasing stock market during the last half of the recession. So the idea here is that the next time we have a recession, you might regard the later stages of that recession as a particularly opportune time to be invested, not to not be invested. And there's another ancillary point that goes along with this, is that the recessions by the time that they are officially confirmed by the National Bureau of Economic Research, there's usually a substantial lag of 5, 7, sometimes 12 months. I think it's even longer than that. So by the time the National Bureau tells you that the recession has started, the recession is well underway and investors have already reacted. By the time the person walking around Main Street gets the news that the recession has ended, investors have, for the most part, already acted on that information and it's already reflected in stock prices. So as Warren Buffett says, if you're going to wait till spring for the daisies to bloom, you will have missed the whatever. I forgot how that analogy goes, but I think I made the point there. We got something else in the mailbag, Alice?
Yeah. We have a comment and question from Stan following up on last week's program. He said, last week you discussed closed-end funds. You explained how buying this type of fund at a discount to its net asset value would boost the yield you receive on the fund. However, you didn't mention anything about leverage. Don't closed-end funds with high yields usually employ leverage?
Yes, they do. I think I was probably still thinking about the Bonnie Raitt concert last week, so I left that out, and that's a very important point. To recap briefly, closed-end funds are issued, they issue their shares once at inception, and then they trade at a price that could vary dramatically from what the shares are intrinsically worth. The leverage allows the fund to boost its yields, but it also increases the risk. So typically what happens is a fund will have two share classes, a common share class that you probably are considering purchasing, and a preferred share class. The preferred share class is stipulated to receive a much lower interest rate typically. So let's say it's a 5% world and the fund generates a 5% return on its portfolio. It might offer the preferred shareholders 3%. And it will take that extra money from the preferred shareholders and purchase more assets. The long and the short of it is that as the leverage expands or increases, there is increased volatility for the entire fund. Some of the risks that hit these funds, we'll have to discuss those next week when we have a little bit more time. But basically, what happens is if a fund declines in value and prices go down, the fund is forced to sell assets at drastically reduced prices. They're forced to sell exactly at the wrong time. Is that right, Rob?
Yeah, that's normally the case.
Right. So I think that brings us to the end of our segment here. My name is Glenn Wessel. You've been listening to Rob Simon and Alice Wessel as well. We're joined by Forrest. This is Investor IQ, WWNC, 570 AM, the talk of the mountains. Join us next Saturday morning at 7 o'clock, where we try to improve your investment IQ just a little bit more each week. Thanks very much.